show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Getting started right away with the second hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. It's the first hour in some cities, but it's the second hour for us. No time to waste. Terry Keyes is costing us a fortune today. That's right. He's an expensive guy. And he's here again with us for Professor Plum, who's going to return here with me tomorrow, I'm told. We'll see. We'll find out. We're standing by. We're helping you out with your most pressing money questions. A lot of things to talk about this hour, taking your phone calls. I do want to get into the one thing that we didn't cover last hour, Terry, with buckets, which is sort of tweaking the buckets to get a little bit more juice out of, you know, maybe buckets 1, 2, and 3, maybe. So we'll talk about that. We do have a lot of stuff to talk about. That means, of course, that you need to take part in the show, right? Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. We do take your phone calls first, so get your money questions ready. You give us a call right here. As for your emails, you send those questions and comments to us right here, wealthed.com. You do that at the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Ask a question, and we'll answer it right here on the air. Professor Plum is out today, as I said, but the Brain Trust is here standing by for you, and we can do so both on and off the air. You can keep in mind the advisors at Lucia Capital Group can help you out with your own individual situation. If you want a personalized buckets plan and you need one, you get in touch with the professor or Terry Keyes or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. They'll set you up with your own bucket strategy. They got an entire network of Brain Trust advisors all across the country ready to help you out. Again, the number off the air, 800-644-1150, or right there at wealthed.com. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. You look like you're ready to just...
More useless information. It just came to me.
Oh, man.
I'm going to teach you and Adam something right now that you probably did not know. I just discovered this yesterday afternoon.
Well, you're going to teach everybody.
Everybody. Everybody watching. Some people, sports fanatics, might already know this.
Oh, man. Okay, what do you got,
Terry? We got the wild card weekend coming up, all right? So we've got two AFC games. NFL. Yep, everybody knows the wild card is. Come on, NFL football. All right. You got the Green Bay Packers traveling to the Washington Redskins. The road team is favored, the Green Bay Packers in the NFC. You got the Seattle Seahawks traveling to Minnesota. Seattle Seahawks, the road team, traveling to the home team, favored.
Okay.
Wait, there's more. You've got the Pittsburgh Steelers traveling to Cincinnati. Not a very long trip, by the way, but they are traveling to Cincinnati. Nah. Guess who the favorite is?
Well, the road team again.
Yeah,
the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
And the final AFC game is what? Kansas City Chiefs traveling to the Houston Oilers.
No, it's not the Oilers.
Yeah, the Texans. All right.
Yeah, who's favored?
Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know, and even a very, very long time have I ever, and I don't know, do you have any recollection of any time when all four traveling road teams in the first weekend of the playoffs were all favored?
No, I don't, but it shows the sorry state of the of a couple of very bad NFL conferences in the AFC and the NFC, all right?
So in theory, all the lowest seeds are going to win.
Well, because you get in by default by winning,
right? But if you're traveling, you're the lower seed. The lower seed travels to the higher seed.
Exactly. But, you know, you're going to the division winner that had a rotten year. All right. Is that it?
That's it. That's just sharing the information. I pick these little things up from day to day, and I figure with this this medium here, we can share it with more than just you and Adam. Like
well,
you
that's,
said,
that's quite interesting. Wow, that's Professor
how we
Plum,
can tie that into buckets. I have no
we
idea.
We can't. But Professor Plum would never have thought to bring that up on this.
No,
program.
No, and he probably was rolling over in his airline seat right now.
Terry Keyes is here with me, Johnny Dean. We are taking your phone calls, 877-PLANNER. Now, I want to get into buckets because that's really what we talk about. We had a situation last hour where we were talking about bucket strategy, okay? We took a portfolio. We divided it up. We had a $500,000 hypothetical portfolio. We put, say, $140,000 into bucket one. You put another amount in bucket two. We didn't really get into the numbers. Mm-hmm. And another amount in bucket three. Now, that's okay for most people. But when you talk about buckets, Terry, there are ways to sort of tweak each individual bucket to give you what, you know, some people need, say, or want, or whatever, lifetime income.
Yeah, so designing your bucket strategy prior to and in retirement is not just as simple as putting some money in cash and putting some money in the stock market.
Right.
That's just the way to explain how the concept works. It's a good training exercise, and it's a good beginning place. But in reality, In order to optimize your entire portfolio, you obviously need the help of professionals like all of us here at Lucia Capital Group. And what we end up doing is recommending things like maybe adding a little income from a different source, not just spending your cash down. That's one way to do it. But maybe start taking some income from a pension plan that you buy. All right, you can go to these huge A-rated insurance companies and buy pension plans in the form of a lifetime income product. Okay,
sure.
I'm not going to go into any details. Just in general, you can buy. So that if you don't have a large pension or a medium-sized pension from the federal government or any pension at all, then that's something you really want to consider, because the purpose for buying a pension, the purpose for owning lifetime income as part of your overall strategy, is another longevity play. Another, you're protecting your portfolio against one of you living too long.
Yes.
So if it's a couple doing this, then if one of you lives in your 90s, you're probably wise, or thinks you might, because you have longevity on your family and you're both in good health. Well, then you might want to consider it. Okay.
Well, I've had people ask me, though, a bucket strategy, isn't that sort of just setting you up for lifetime income? I mean, how long is a bucket? If you put your hypothetical $500,000 and bucketize it properly,
it should last your lifetime.
It should last your lifetime. But what are we talking lifetime? What if somebody lives, they retire at 60? And they're 105. They're 45 years.
So to answer the question I think you're asking is, couldn't you just do your bucket strategy alone?
Yes.
Yes, you could. But now this is a way to optimize your strategy a little more, because if that thing that you purchase for $100,000, let's say, runs out of money when you and your wife are both 88, and now this insurance company is writing you checks that you don't have to take from your portfolio, how did your portfolio do compared to the other plan?
It takes the pressure off is what it does.
Yeah, and you could end up leaving your heirs even more in that scenario, because the money was coming from the insurance company the last 10 years of your life, not from your portfolio.
You know, the idea of guaranteed income, on a personal note, to me is I love it. Okay, if I had nothing but guaranteed income, now I don't really have a pension necessarily, other than, you know, a couple of after pensions, but I never worked for the federal government.
Right.
You know, I was not no place that I worked, which is mostly radio and TV
right.
stations. You know, they're not going to pay you a ton of money. Yeah. So the idea of having guaranteed lifetime income to me would be one of the top things on my list. And it's true for other people. Now they might say, well, wait a minute, if I need guaranteed lifetime income, well, then why wouldn't I just take my entire portfolio, call it $500,000, and just, you know, sock it into some form of guaranteed lifetime income. Then I don't care what the markets do. I don't care about anything else. I'm getting a check coming in every month. But
it's a great concept. You just can't take your whole portfolio and do it.
Yes, and somebody say, well, then the question is, why not?
Because there's no inflation hedge built into those things. So
right.
if there was, if some insurance, then they can't do it because it wouldn't make sense financially. But if some insurance company would say, oh, we'll give you a 1.5% inflation increase in the payment every year the rest of your life, then I would recommend it, because there'd be nothing better out there. So you take this payment, let's say of your $20,000 a year, six of it's going to come from your lifetime income.
Mm-hmm.
So of the $20,000 scenario we use, that $6,000 is always going to be $6,000. And when you're 60 versus 90, 30 years later, there was that $6,000 yeah. doesn't buy anywhere near what it bought when you were 60.
No.
So that's the reason why you don't do that. But it's not bad for 20 to 25% of your portfolio sometimes. So, again, just a way to tune up your strategy a little bit. It's just a concept. You want to look at it, study it as part of your plan. Now, do we have time to jump to the other side of the
you got about 2 minutes. Two
oh,
and
that's
a half.
More than enough time. Okay. So we'll jump to the other side of the of the buckets,
like,
and we've got the
three?
Long-term bucket, bucket okay. three. Now, again, in basic training, it's equities. Now, we step up our basic training a little bit, and it's not just equities. It's domestic, international, small cap, mid cap, large cap. We can start to build your bucket three, make it really nice, diversified. Well, one more way to make it high performance, your bucket three, is to take some of that money from bucket three, whatever you decide, you and your client together decide, and move it into alternative investments. So get it out of the international or domestic stock market. So we're not buying equities,
you're not
which
buying
is ownership.
Stocks.
Stock is ownership in companies. Mm-hmm. Owning a small piece of companies you feel are good long-term investments, right? That's what stock purchasing is, right? So now what we do is we buy some alternative investments, like maybe some real estate investments, some business development companies, which are companies that lend money to companies. So now instead of buying ownership in equities, you're making money from being a lender because you have the money to do it. You're making money from being a partner in a real estate program because you have money to do it. MLPs, oil and gas. I mean, I could go on and on. There's all different types of things. But normally they're things that produce income.
Right.
Another source of income.
Income out of bucket number three.
Yes, a long-term bucket. That's just, I don't even call it bucket three anymore. I call it your alternatives bucket. So it's nice and clear what it is. So you could have your lifetime income bucket. You could have a bucket one, a bucket two, and a bucket three, and now your alternatives bucket. And by the way, that's the way Rick and I train it all over the country now, is that we're going to name those what they really are. And I don't know what percentage. I don't even want to quote a percentage. But a certain percentage of the money you put into the alternatives can also be sent, and you can use that as another source of income in retirement.
And so by providing that income for somebody, what does that do? That, again, sort of relieves some of the...
All studies show. Every Wharton School study, all the business school studies, all the studies show that the more sources of annuitized income that you have in retirement. So you've got the lifetime pension you bought from the insurance company. You've got cash you're spending. You've got Social Security. Now you bought these alternatives. You've got all these different sources. It makes it a better portfolio. It makes you a better investor with the rest of your money too.
Right, because think about this. If you really needed to generate every dollar out of an equity portfolio, you're going to want to have to roll the dice on that.
And all the people doing that are rolling the dice every day.
And then you're gambling with your money because nothing is guaranteed.
We met a lot of people in 2008 and 2009 that were rolling the dice, John.
Exactly, because they had to make up for it. All right, 877-PLANNER, some emails coming up. You want to email us, wealthed.com, along with your phone calls. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. You've been sitting here listening and watching the program and hearing Terry Keyes filling in for Professor Rick Plum, and you're saying to yourself, man, I'd love to meet that guy. What a bright guy that guy is, that Terry Keyes person. Well, guess what? Your opportunity is coming up. That's right. If you happen to be in any one of the cities where Terry Keyes and Professor Plum are going to be doing their 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops, of course, they are presented by Lucia Capital Group, then you get your chance for free. Right, you get to talk to, ask questions.
This is a no-cost, no-obligation opportunity to meet the Professor Plum and myself.
You're not obligated to meet Terry Keyes, mm-hmm. is what he means. Mm-hmm. The first one of the, I guess it's the spring series now. We're already back. Mm-hmm. We'll be into spring before you know it, even though it's still technically winter. February 20th, that'll be in Las Vegas, Nevada. Join us in the Las Vegas. All the details we'll give you shortly. I mean, we'll just tell you where they're going to be. February 27th in Seattle, Washington. And then March 12th in Phoenix, Arizona. Those will be the first three of several that they'll be doing workshops around the country, talking about retirement income, all the challenges that retirees have. A lot of the same stuff that we've been talking about on this program today and that we talk about all the time. So if you want to sign up, it's free, as he said. You can. I don't think it's at wealthed.com yet. Check there. If not, I think I said it'd be up within a day or two. They're just putting the final details on. But you can certainly give us a call, 800-644-1150, and sign up. Meet Terry Keyes, meet Professor Rick Plum, and get your money questions answered, just like we do on this program. Speaking of wealthed.com, we got some emails I want to get to here, and we have a couple of lines open, 877-PLANNER. If you have any money questions, 877-752-6637. I want to get to Doris in Long Island. Let's see what this is all about. I'm 65 years old. My husband is 67, she says. We're retired with state pensions, and we receive Social Security. We have an annuity, some deferred comp, and we have $200,000 in the bank from the sale of our old home to use for either paying down the principal on the new house or investing. Our life insurance company has recommended investing in a flexible, premium, adjustable life insurance policy. We have a policy worth $57,000 now. They suggest a $50,000 outlay with $12,000 a year for the next 9 years. This would be a $300,000 life insurance policy. With the max cumulative premium in 2027. Now, some of the technical stuff is in there, but is this a good investment, says Doris?
And the answer is absolutely no. First of all, life insurance policies were never and are still never designed as a good investment, okay? They are a very, very safe money place, and they are a tax-favored investment. They're a nice mm-hmm. tax-favored investment. But as far as going into an insurance policy for an investment purposes, so which for rate of return, no, absolutely not. And the first question is, do these people even need life insurance? What I find is when all of your bills are paid and you've got enough deferred comp, pension plan, Social Security, all these things in income, what's the purpose for life insurance? Why are you buying life insurance? So you have to determine, first of all, what your need is. Now, if there was a need for life insurance and it were a temporary 5, 10, 15 year need, then uh-huh. go buy a cheap term insurance policy. I mean, and shop it and get the least insurance you
yeah.
can. So,
I wondered about this because they're in their mid-60s.
Oh,
and
expensive.
It's expensive as heck. I'm guessing they can qualify, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how much life insurance. Obviously, they were being suggested this as some kind of investment where the life insurance salesperson, whoever that is, could see some.
If you have, and I don't know all the details, they can't give it to us in an email like this. Yeah. If you have all the money you need in retirement from your Social Security, your pensions, everything, and you're not even spending all that, and you got all this extra money that you can throw into a vehicle and you're never, ever, ever going to spend it in your lifetime, then maybe you consider this for only one reason, not for an investment.
Yeah.
You would consider life insurance then to try to make your kids wealthier. But you wouldn't put in $50,000 up front and $12,000 a year if you did that idea, which isn't a bad idea, by the way. So they come to me and or to Rick and I and say, hey, we'd like to leave our kids $600,000 tax-free, which is life insurance is.
Yeah.
Then I go out and I do the opposite of that. I shop for the lowest guaranteed death benefit life insurance policy premium I can find.
Wait, lowest? Okay, so you're saying
I want the most death benefit.
You look for the lowest possible
cost,
least amount of death benefit, because the cost of the life insurance is the death benefit, right?
Yes.
So the lowest cost means the lowest death benefit.
Right. This plan that they described just now is really a form of overfunding a universal life policy for.
Well, what does that mean? A lot of people don't even know. Flexible premium adjustable. What is that?
It's just a universal life insurance policy that has cash value in it. When you overfund cash value in a life insurance policy, you're doing it for yourself, because in 15 or 20 years down the road, okay, when you overfund an insurance policy and you let compounding interest work in your favor, then you can take loans out of the policy tax-free, and it's not a bad place for income. But when you're 60-some years old and it doesn't work unless you hold it for at least 15 to 20 years, what is this insurance agent suggesting? They start taking income from this policy when they're 85
82?
Years old?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't work on a 60-year-old. So that concept that they're doing there is great for a 45-year-old couple, a couple of professionals who make so much money, they're maxing out their 401ks, their Roth IRAs, mm-hmm. whatever. That's that concept. So that is a classic example of life insurance being wrong, used the wrong way in the wrong situation, because all every insurance agent out there wants to do is sell you a policy. Now, if I were just an insurance agent, which I'm not, and I just wanted to sell life insurance, I would still have a better approach with those people. I'd say, hey, you got so much money, you're already living off your deferred comp, your pensions, your Social Security, everything else. How would you like to leave your kids $600,000? And I could probably, I don't know the numbers, but I could probably design a policy for way less premium than they're gonna fork out for that thing. Or take that same amount of money, divide it over their lifetime, and make sure that it stays in force for as long as they live. Because if you do that, you don't ever want to cancel that policy. You want to make sure the death benefit pays out.
Well, because you'll never get one otherwise.
All right. Now, one little interesting fact that people probably all know, and I know you know, John, but nobody ever thinks about all the time, is you buy a life insurance policy and you make the smallest possible premium that they allow you to make the first year, and you die at the end of the first year, you just got a 10,000% rate of return on your money, because you only put $2,000 in and you got $600,000 back.
You made
right?
one premium yeah. payment and you're done.
Now, if you make 10 premium payments, you still got a really good investment. It's probably a 12% per year rate of return. I'm making up the numbers, right?
Yeah.
You live till you're 96 years old, past normal life expectancy, and you made every guaranteed premium that they asked you to make. Do you know what the rate of return on a normal life insurance policy is at that point?
No idea.
3.5% to 4% on your money.
And that could be over what?
So if you outlive the insurance, but your kids are still going to get the 600 someday. But mm-hmm. when you go back and do the calculation of what it took you to get them that 600, the longer you live with life insurance, the less rate of return, even tax free, it's going to yours.
Oh,
now,
sure.
A 4% compounding rate over 30 years at tax free is not a bad investment. I'm not suggesting that. But once you buy it, you keep it forever and make sure it goes to your kids tax free.
Yeah, and part of the problem with this, you know, you get generic advice with regards to annuities, you get generic advice with regards to life insurance. And the reason for that, everybody says, don't ever buy any kind of permanent cash value policy, is because they're sold incorrectly.
Most full practice financial advisors, fully licensed financial advisors all over the United States, are not really good experts in life insurance for whatever reason. I don't know why. It scares them. They don't understand. It's complicated. I don't know. Most of the people selling life insurance, outselling it every day all over the United States, mm-hmm. are only life insurance agents. Well, if that's all the license they hold and that's all they recommend is life insurance and annuities, when they meet with you, that's all you're going to get recommended to you is a life insurance or an annuity. I mean, it's just common sense.
Well, and the sales pitches are interesting. It's like, as I relate it back to tools, because that's what these are all financial tools. If all you sold were shovels, you would want to tell everybody that no matter what the job is, you know, whether it's digging a hole or mm-hmm. or you know, pounding a nail into a piece of wood.
The shovel works.
You need a shovel. And here's why. And they'll come up with all kinds of convoluted answers for it. So, okay, we got to take a break. That was quick. We got more. 877 Planner. Going to be talking about asset location along with anything else that's on your mind. We do have some phone lines open. 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Terry Keyes here on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Terry Keyes, sitting in for Professor Rick Plum. Rick will be back tomorrow, but in the meantime, you've got us for the next, 25 minutes or so, answering your money questions. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Now, one aspect of buckets also that involves, we could do a whole probably hour on this, Terry, but I want you to at least comment on some of this stuff. And this came up, I think, with one of our callers last hour. It might have been Franklin or one of them. Where you mentioned asset location. Now, when we talk about asset location, that's a whole different animal from asset allocation. But at the same time, the two of them really kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
They go hand in hand because they're both forms of...
You can't have one without the other.
Kind of forms of managing your investment, right?
Yeah. So when we talk about, you mentioned asset location, just what are you talking about when you say, what is asset location and why is it important?
Well, usually, at some point in a workshop with a live audience, I'll ask the group, how many people think they have an understanding of what asset allocation is?
Yeah.
And a good percentage of the people there will raise their hands and say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Asset allocation is putting your investments into different categories to diversify yourself.
Yeah.
So maybe a little long-term equities, maybe a little some bonds, maybe some international, right? That's asset allocation. We're allocating our assets into different categories for diversification, which is supposed to help mitigate risk, right?
Right.
When something's down, maybe the other thing will be up.
Right.
Right. Asset location is purchasing the right investments with the right types of registered accounts.
Okay.
And what I mean by registered accounts is your account registered as a Roth? Is your account registered as a traditional IRA? Totally different.
Yes.
Tax-wise, right? Yes. Everyone knows a Roth is totally different tax-wise than an IRA. Or is it an individual brokerage account that is not any type of a qualified account? So when you have, let's say I meet with a couple that has $600,000, 200 is Roth, 200 is IRA, and 200 is, just traditional brokerage, individual brokerage accounts. There's a lot of work to do there. And a lot of questioning and planning and working with the clients to determine which investments we're going to purchase with which of those accounts. Because if they say to me, here's a perfect example, John, if they say to me, we don't want to touch the Roths ever in our lifetime. We did those for our kids. We want to grow the heck out of them.
Okay, so leave them to the heirs.
So then that tells me to go buy long-term growth investments with the Roths.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
We're never going to touch them. We're going to live 25 more years. They're going to grow from 200,000 to a million, and our kids are going to inherit $1 million. That's their theory. Okay.
Okay. So that when you throw the numbers out like that, you're using this for illustrative purposes.
Illustrative purposes only. No rate of return there. Whatever.
No. Okay.
You money doubles every 12 years at 6%.
Right.
All right.
Or
so
every 10 years.
Yeah.
At
7% so I was doubling it three times in my head.
Okay. There.
That's all
fine.
I was doing.
I got you.
So now, same scenario, but the couple says, no, we really don't even have kids that we want to leave the Roths to. The whole reason we piled up those Roths is we want to take tax-free income them, keep our tax bracket as low as possible in retirement. I just decided I'm not buying long-term growth. I'm going to buy assets that produce income, bond-like assets, alternative investments that produce income, and I'm going to find the best producing income assets I can find, and I'm going to take the income. If you can get 6% income off of $200,000, there's $12,000 of income off those Roths that is totally not taxable. So their asset location plan is different than the previous one.
Exactly.
That's a perfect example of asset location.
Yes, and that's an example of how it differs from asset allocation. You hear people talk all the time about the importance of allocating the proper assets. Got to have small cap, mid cap, you got to have bonds, you got to have equities, you got to have this and that. And so they allocate the assets. But very little attention, for whatever reason, is paid by many people, not all, by many people, as to where those assets should be located.
Well, because the average consumer doesn't know how to do it. You've got to be very familiar with all the different tax codes, the laws, and all that. Your average financial advisor either doesn't know how to do it or it's too much work because he or she would rather be golfing in the afternoon than meeting with six clients a day. So, I mean, that's the fact, because otherwise, why wouldn't you do it? What really irritates me, okay, and I know it irritates Rick, too. He just won't show it as much as I will, John.
Okay, all right, okay.
A client comes in brand new, shows us their portfolio from their previous advisor, and everything's backwards. They bought all the wrong assets with the wrong investments. So another perfect example of asset location. Client takes, or the advisor and their client, takes all of the IRA money and puts it in long-term growth assets, right?
Okay.
Because they're 59 years old when they meet with their advisor, and he or she says, look it, don't touch those things. Every time you touch them, it's taxable income.
Right.
So I'm going to buy you long-term equities, and they're going to grow. They're going to double maybe every 10 years. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to get you better than a 6% rate of return. So do that, and you'll love me because you won't pay any money in taxes. You'll pay very little, right?
Yeah.
But the problem with that is when you turn 70 and a half, you've now got the government telling you you must take a required minimum distribution, which we did have a question on in the first hour.
Of course.
Well, I just took whatever amount I put in there. Who knows? Maybe doubled, maybe tripled it, maybe quadrupled it over a long, long period of time. And now you're 70 and a half.
And guess what?
You're in a 25% tax bracket.
And you are required, hence the R in RMD, you are required to take it out.
Yeah. Asset location idea. I know the Roth was a good place to buy income investments, but you know what? An IRA is not a bad place to buy income investments sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could have bought 5 or 6% producing assets with the IRA, take 5 or 6% of my IRA, and pay taxes on it in a 15% tax bracket. So yeah, today I pay 15, and I pay 15 the rest of my life under that scenario.
Right.
Under the first scenario, today I pay very little to nothing,
but
I pay 25% the rest of my life once I hit 70 and a half.
Yeah, and it can be hard, I think, for people to get their heads around.
Well, it takes
that.
Vision. It takes planning.
Well, you have to tell them because, you know, you're not going to pay as much now, but 10 years from now, what are you going to be paying?
It also takes, you know, getting to know your client really well and finding out what do you really want to accomplish? What are your goals? How do you want to do this? Now, I'm not suggesting that everybody watching and listening here should buy income-producing assets with a Roth or vice versa or anything. Yeah. What I'm saying is it's a process that you need to go through, and you need help doing it. You need professional help doing it.
Oh yeah, yeah. You don't want to mess this up. Now you mentioned inheriting assets. I like to ask you this: are there better assets to inherit or leave to heirs than others?
Absolutely.
I mean, you have IRAs, you have Roths, you got all kinds of things.
Right.
How do you know what to leave to your
heirs? Right. So if my parents were leaving me $1 million, I would prefer that all $1 million of it would be in a Roth.
Roth IRA.
Yeah.
Because?
Because there's no tax consequence whatsoever, any of it, no matter what.
So you got $1 million. They bought some high-flying stock 40 years ago for $80,000, now worth $1 million.
Yep.
And their cost basis doesn't matter because they bought it inside of a Roth.
Another nice, nice asset to inherit, long-term held equities in an individual account, right? Not in an IRA account, not in a Roth, not in anything, because they get a step up in basis at death. So my parents bought $50,000 worth of Starbucks 25 years ago. It grew to $3 million. They leave me $3 million. Mm-hmm. It all gets stepped up in basis. There's no taxes.
Now, on a Roth, there is a required minimum distribution for non-spouse beneficiaries, right?
Yeah, but it's a moot point to me because you can cash them out tax-free when you inherit them anyway.
So if you happen to just inherit $1 million, doesn't matter because it's not going to be added to your income.
Right.
You could do it day one,
sure,
which
absolutely.
I think a lot of people probably would.
They do, yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
When you inherit, say, a traditional IRA with equities or some kind of capital assets inside that IRA.
Now you're starting to lean towards a list of things I don't really want to inherit, okay?
Right, and there are good reasons for that. And what is that?
Well, let's say you're 50. You're not of the retirement age yet even. But when you're 50, a lot of times your parents may be 80.
Yeah.
If they were about 30 when you were born, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 80 is a year or so or really close to average life expectancy.
Right.
Right? So your parents pass on with, you know, $1 million in an IRA and leave it to you and your sister, you get $500,000 each in an IRA, you're only 50. The law says you must start taking distributions. There's no law that says you can't take it all, cash it all out, but you'd have to pay tax on all $500,000.
Sure.
So you may take advantage of that law saying you have to take it at 50, but you have to start taking it.
Now, you have to start taking it. You can take it out over your life expectancy still,
yep,
right?
Which is a long period of time,
right.
Little dribs and drabs at a piece. But it's taxable every time you do it.
And again, as I understand it, if you don't take that money out within, if you don't start taking required minimum distributions, I think it's the year following the year of death.
It is. That's a, you got it.
If you don't start taking it out, that all that money has to come out within 5 years.
Yes.
And if you got $500,000.
So you just limited yourself from plan A to plan B, which is divide the money by five, $100,000 per year, assuming no growth, and you're going to pay tax on $100,000 a year. You're going to be in a 25% tax bracket for sure, maybe more.
Oh, maybe more, depending on what
you and your spouse earn on your own, right?
So if you're talking about inheriting assets, better to inherit a Roth. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking down the road, mm-hmm, for your kids or whoever would wind up getting this money,
Assets that have grown over a long period of time in an individual account.
Mm-hmm. But not so good. Much inside of a traditional, it a traditional IRA.
No, that's. I mean, I'll take it. You want to leave me $1 million in IRA, I'll take it. But I mean, it's not first on my priority list.
No, there's no step up in basis with the assets that are inside that IRA.
How about an annuity, John? If you inherit an annuity, your parents paid $100,000 for it, it's now worth $600,000.
What happens to an inherited annuity?
Taxes. No RMD, no anything.
Just taxes.
Taxes, that year.
So as you're probably saying, that's not a great asset to...
I don't like leaving annuities.
No, I think annuities are probably meant to be spent.
Yes.
That would be something that I... All right. Now you know the rest of the story. All right, 877-PLANNER. If you have any money questions, you got another segment coming up, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Terry Keyes. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Terry Keyes. With you for another couple of minutes or so, and Professor Plum will return with me tomorrow on this program, and we're also going to be talking tomorrow with Professor Plum about how to determine how much you need in retirement. You know, we were talking bucket strategy today. We were talking about allocating your assets and locating your assets, and what do you do with how do you decumulate or distribute the money? But then the other question that needs to be answered is, well, how do you know how much you actually need in retirement? You know, they talk about these retirement numbers all the time on these commercials. I see this all the time. What's your retirement number? Well, you know, you got two things to think about here. You got to know how much you might need in retirement. That's number one. That will help you with the accumulation phase. But at the same time, you have to know how to take that money out, which is what we talked about today.
30 years and meeting with thousands and thousands of potential people, retirees, mm-hmm, and retirees over these last 30 plus years. Most often. More times than not, people retire on about what they were living on pre-retirement, John.
You mean that's what they need
you
to
made,
retire
if you
on?
As a couple made $80,000 a year while you were living and doing anything,
yeah,
you're pretty close to that when you retire too, is what their goals are usually.
That's what their goals are.
And people don't all of a sudden start spending more in retirement, and they also,
no,
this misnomer that, oh, you can live on $40,000. Well, if you never save anything and you're forced to live on $40,000,
right,
that's a different thing. But you know, good responsible people that are saving for retirement are normally retiring on pretty close to what they lived on.
How do you know at age 40 when you should be planning and saving? I mean,
well,
how do you know at age 40 what you're going to need to live on at age 65?
Just going to have to make some assumptions, like an inflation factor. So if you and your spouse at age 40 are making $80,000 to $100,000 a year combined, get your calculator out with your financial advisor, which Rick is going to do tomorrow, I'm sure, and step that up to age 60 if that's your retirement goal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, 1% per year, 1.5%, 2%, 3%, whatever number you feel comfortable with.
Okay.
The higher the number you use, the more safe your plan will be.
Right.
So let's say you say 2% a year, and then you figure out what is $100,000 20 years from now at a 2% inflation rate. That's how you do it. And then say that number is 180. Now your savings goal has to get you to 180 once you include both your Social Securities, any pensions you might, mm-hmm, receive, that type of stuff. And then I can tell you what you both need to save. I mean, it's not that complicated, but there are some assumptions that have to be made.
Well, there are. And then you have to, I would think you got to review those assumptions periodically, because your income needs when you're 40. You might find when you're in your 50s and you start really making money, as a lot of people do, at least your peak earning years, I mentioned before, you think, oh, gee, I don't know if I can live on what I thought I could live on when I was 40. And now I've only got 10 years till I retire.
Yeah.
you know, it can be a challenge. So that's why it's important to understand how much, and the way, there's a way to determine it. So we will talk about that tomorrow on this program. 877-PLANNER, our number. If you want to email us, you go to wealtheds.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheds.com, and send us an email. Bruce in Irvine, California. I inherited a lot of money 24 years ago, and I've been living off of the income. Last year, my brokerage firm put me into a portfolio of individual bonds, and most of them defaulted earlier this last year. So I lost nearly $300,000. Wow. I'm 64, and they're now advising me to put $700,000 into one annuity and $610,000 in another, and to transfer the risk to the insurance company instead of me having it. Is this a good idea?
Well, first of all, it's not a good idea if you're going back to the same advisor that puts you in the bonds. They had to be junk bonds that they defaulted.
Oh, I'm sure they
no
were.
No decent bonds that defaulted.
Bonds. Huh? Yeah, I would assume they
were. They were all
been.
Junk bonds. So he let his advisors talk him into a better than usual rate of return by accepting default risk. Right.
And then guess
which
what happened?
Yeah. It defaulted. And well, first of all, sometimes fixed or indexed annuities. Does he say what type of annuity, John, or no?
Doesn't say. No, he just said
so sometimes annuities. Sometimes fixed or indexed annuities are a good alternative to bonds. But my first advice is don't go back to the same financial advisors.
Well, he's 64. That much we know.
Right. So he's good.
Evidently, he had quite a bit of money he must have inherited because 24 living off of it for 24 years.
And my other answer, my other gut reaction to that email is not all of your money should be in annuities, no matter what. So, I mean, that's a big portion of his money if he puts it all in those annuities.
Yeah, and again, I don't know how much he has, but be careful. You don't want to put all your money away. So, and for the reasons that you mentioned before. Okay, I want to get to the trivia because we didn't get to trivia yesterday.
No.
And this one comes from the Social Security Administration. And they are telling us this. An individual that has earned up to the maximum Social Security wage base each year, who then waits to take their Social Security retirement benefit until age 70, will receive 77% more income per month than if he or she had to take a retirement benefit early at age 62.
Well, yeah, man, that to me makes common sense. It makes sense. But think about the beginning of this question, John.
Yes.
Maxed out the maximum wage base for 35 years, and they still assumed you're going to wait a little to take your Social Security, right?
So the maximum
So
of
let's
age,
assume they retired at 65, just for assumptions.
Okay.
You will have had the start of working at 30 and maxing out at 30 every single year all the way to 65. There's your 35 years.
You made good money.
You must have. This is not a big percentage of the population is the point I'm getting to here.
Yeah.
Right? And then you waited 5 years, you turned your Social Security on. You're going to get 77% more than had you turned your Social Security on at 62.
Now, what I don't understand is, wouldn't that be true for anybody who waits between age 62 and age 70?
No, I think the number's compounded because of the size of the benefit once you've maxed out. I'm not doing the numbers in my head, but... So if you weren't a maxed out person, 62 benefit was 800.
Yeah.
Versus a person whose 62 benefit might be 1800 or 2000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the max person 62 is almost 1800, because then it goes to 2400 if you wait till 66 or 67.
Yeah.
And then it goes to 3200 or 3400 if you wait till 70. These are rough numbers. Okay.
I could see how the check could be larger, certainly, because
you think it's always 77%. I have to do the math.
I would think that the percentage increase would be the same, but because Social Security is telling us this, and they throw in the part about the Social Security wage base each year, making up to that, that makes me think that maybe you get more.
You do. The maximum, what that's telling me is the maximum way to max Social Security is max it out all 35 years, wait till 70.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Or get the maximum increase over 62, too.
Yes.
So maybe you and Professor Plum and I will do some calculations off air and see if it's always 77%.
Yeah, I'm going to have him do that. He might know off air.
He probably knows off the top of his head.
Yeah, although this is going to change because full retirement age changes. That's the other thing we got to do.
He's probably on an airplane somewhere right now reading a Social Security manual, unfortunately.
Well, the guy does this. I don't know why, but he does this.
I mean, I got to get a dig in. We got like a minute or so left, 2 days of sitting in for him. I got to get a dig in. So,
do you have any more digs? Because you got like 30 seconds
Rick, just
left.
Keep reading that manual, buddy. Just keep it up and let us know what you find out when you land, okay?
All right. That's a decent way to put it. We are about out of time for this program. Professor Plum will be back tomorrow. If you have any other questions for us, you can, if you're on hold, hang on. We'll have Terry Keyes talk to you off the air. But if you need the Brain Trust and you want to talk to Terry Keyes, besides meeting him in person over the next,
February 20th in Vegas, 27th in Seattle.
Exactly. You can sign up for those workshops and meet him then. You can also talk to this guy off the air or Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group at their number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Talk to an advisor about your buckets strategy. I thank Terry Keyes for him and for Professor Rick Plum. I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.